when is it the right time to raise money? Somebody is charging 10 lakhs, somebody 5 lakhs. You know, we had done a revenue of 36 lakhs a year before with 1.8 lakhs profit before tax because I wasn't taking a salary. My salary is a loss rather. There is no work-life balance. There's only work-life integration. You live for your work for the first few years, definitely. You can't push off at 5 p.m. and say, oh, ho gaya. This Saturday, Sunday, I can't do this. You have to do it if you wanted to succeed. But let me tell you, all these lists of, you know, top 100, top, it's all rubbish. You're financially successful when you're doing better than your sister-in-law's husband.
That is the best one line I've heard on the podcast, I think. Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj. And today I'm gathered for a very, very special podcast with the legendary Mr. Sanjeev Bikhchandani, who's the founder of InfoEdge. Thank you so much, sir, for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me, Jivraj.
I'm very excited and absolutely honored to have the opportunity to host you again on the show. You were very kind the first time around to be there for the 50th episode on the podcast. And now we are 2 years in, we've done 100 more episodes. The ecosystem has evolved a bunch. The last time we spoke, it was 2021. Everything was very happy. Everything was very kind. Everybody was full of positive sentiment. Currently, there seems to be some sort of negative sentiment. But since then, Zomato has gone public. Policy Bazaar has gone public. We've seen multiple things happen on your end. Where I want to start this conversation, Mr. Sanjeev, is that if you can share what the current markets hold for the young entrepreneur who saw the young wave of positive optimism, but now is seeing some sort of pessimism in the country. But where do you think Indian entrepreneurship is headed, and what would you like to say to that young entrepreneur?
Well, I think I will say what I've always said. Focus on the customer's money, not the investor's money.
Right.
Right. Beech mein, it became very easy to raise investor money, and perhaps more than you needed or deserved. Very often people mistake that for success. That is not success.
Right.
That is merely success at raising money. It's not success at running a viable business. So I've always said that the customer's money is better than the investor's money, because if you're getting the customer's money and you're getting it repeatedly, and you're getting it at a price that's higher than your cost, then chances are you have a viable business if you can get enough customers.
Right.
And if you get the customer's money, investor ka paisa aayega, zarur aayega.
Absolutely.
Okay, because investors love to invest behind businesses that are getting the customer's money.
100%.
On the other hand, if you get the investor's money first, it does not mean the customer ka paisa aayega.
Correct.
Because the customer is not going to do any favors. The customer, you cannot go in front of the customer and make a PowerPoint pitch and take his money. Right?
That's right.
The product or service has to work for the customer, for the customer to buy a second time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, very often we say that if I need VCs to start a business, but the truth is, 30 साल पहले कोई VC था नहीं इंडिया में.
Correct.
फिर भी business चालू हो रहे थे.
जब
मैंने चालू किया 1990 में, there was no venture capital. When we launched Naukri in 97, there was no venture capital. We bootstrapped Naukri for 3 years and then raised venture capital.
Right.
तो जो entrepreneur है, जो असली entrepreneur है, he will be an entrepreneur whether or not he raises venture capital.
Absolutely.
So this business of I need external funding as a prerequisite to be an entrepreneur, I think is wrong.
Absolutely.
Focus on the customer. Focus on the customer's money. You know, I was in a panel discussion a few years back, and I was sitting with Sanjeev Agarwal on the panel, founder of Helion Ventures and founder of Daksh, and now in Fundamentum. So somebody got up and asked a question, saying, when is it the right time to raise money? And he said a very perceptive thing, very insightful, Sanjeev Agarwal. He said, the best time to raise money is when the investor comes to you and not when you go to the investor.
Wow.
So focus on getting your company and business into a situation and position where the investor comes to you, rather than you going out and pitching.
So
because that takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
You may not get it.
Mm-hmm.
You should spend that time focusing on your product and your customers. You get some revenue, you get some customers. Investors will chase you. And when investors chase you, you get the valuation you want, you get the terms you want, the money comes in with some speed.
Right.
So that's what I'd say.
Absolutely. No, I am so glad. it's like this continuous message you've been propagating through decades now, which is that focus on the customer, build businesses because of deep customer insights. And that has always been a constant. And I'm so glad you're championing this against the broad narrative of celebrating funding as much. But coming to the other point, right? You've seen the ecosystem now as a digital entrepreneur for 33 years. Before that, you were also building companies, you were working. Talk to us about the India story and how that maps with the startup story, right? Which is to say that we talk about this 5 trillion economy, we talk about multiple unicorns. How have you observed business cycles? And in that context, how do you see startups contributing to the larger India story?
So I began my working career in 1984, straight out of college. That's
39 years ago,
almost 40 years ago. In between, I went to study management for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I've had a total work experience of about maybe 38 years as of now. In 84, and I compare that business environment and state of Indian industry then to what it is today, there's a huge change. People say revolution, but I would say it's evolution. You know, 40 saal mein revolution hoti hai, the evolution hoti hai, and most revolutions are actually evolutions.
Yeah.
Right, but in hindsight, it looks like a revolution.
True.
But if I look at where the growth has come from, where employment has come from, where investment has gone, what are the places where there's buzz? And the places where there's buzz shifts over time. Mm-hmm. Almost all of this has come from companies and sectors that did not exist in 1984 or perhaps barely existed.
That's so true.
So IT services barely existed. IT-enabled services did not exist. Mobile telephony did not exist. Private sector telecom companies did not exist. Private sector insurance companies did not exist. Private sector banking barely existed. Internet did not exist. Websites did not exist. Mobile apps did not exist. Private sector airlines did not exist. Organized retail did not exist. E-commerce did not exist. So sector after sector has come up in the last 40 years,
sure.
Company after company. What this tells me is that the giant companies of today, many of them, were startups or not yet startups 40 years ago. So HCL and Infosys were startups in 1984 when I began my career.
Yeah.
Right? Today they are giant companies. And there are many others like that. Info Edge, Naukri started in 1997. That's 26 years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
Tiny company, run out of a 7-quarter above a garage.
Yeah.
Right? Today we are, listed and, we are profitable and reasonably large. So startups actually are the future of the economy, but over a few decades.
Yeah.
Not immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I think what is commendable is that this government has recognized that and has got a positive policy program under Startup India, right, to actually encourage startups. So startups are happening anyway. The government put a structure on it.
That's true.
And more importantly, the government did path-breaking stuff, such as setting up a fund of funds of 10,000 crores, managed by SIDBI, because it gave a kickstart to the domestic venture capital industry.
True.
Okay? Most of our risk capital comes from overseas. It still does. But you need enough domestic risk capital.
True.
Okay, so all that is happening. So, yes, there are ups and downs. Yes, there was a boom and a bubble, and now people are saying funding winter. Well, actually, there's enough money for good companies.
Yeah.
Right? So the question you have to ask is, are you a good company? And if I'm not today, then how do I get that tomorrow? You'll get the money, but you've got to be a good company.
Absolutely.
But I think the health of the startup ecosystem, you can measure 3-4 ways.
Sure.
Number one, are there enough young, smart founders trying?
Yeah, check.
Is there enough risk capital and enough investors willing to invest in the early stage? A lot better than it was, say, 20 years ago.
Absolutely, check.
Yeah. Is the market large? I mean, when we launched Naukri, there were 14,000 internet accounts in the country.
Yeah.
Today, we're talking about 900 million users.
It's sizable.
Are there role models, histories, successful companies, IPOs, exits happening?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we are getting better and better every year. And yes, within that, there will be ups and downs. And but phir bhi achhi company ke liye bahut paisa hai available.
Absolutely. Net, absolutely positive, and that's what's driving growth in the country.
So let me tell you a little story from an investor's perspective.
Sure.
Our two best investments are Policy Bazaar and Zomato.
Yes.
We invested in Policy Bazaar first in June 2008, just before the global financial crisis.
Yeah.
Okay. We invested in Zomato in 2010, in the middle of the global financial crisis. Markets were down, funding was not easily available. Yet, great companies were born then, and we got great investments. So we are positive that, look, the market is down. It's probably a better time to invest.
Sure. No, that's lovely to hear. I think a lot of clear fundamentals and very interesting to get that vantage point. I want to take a quick digression, right? When anybody observes your career outside in, and they could argue that you've, you know, reached the pinnacle of success, and I don't want to over-exaggerate, but, you know, you've built successful companies, you've invested in successful companies, you've built an education institution which is building futures for multiple younger folks in the country. I'd love to understand what your sort of broad definition of successes. I know this sounds pretty generic, but for somebody who aspires to be like you or have a career, maybe even 10% like yours, what would you like to tell them when they are trying to define success?
See, I had no long-term vision. I was living for the week, for the day, for the quarter.
Okay.
Right? And for me, early success meant if you survived, you were successful. Right? Mm-hmm. So I remember, we used to pay our salaries on the 7th of every month for the previous month.
Yeah.
And I remember so many months in the early 90s where we didn't have money in the bank on the 26th or 27th or 28th. Mm-hmm. And I was always wonder, will I meet payroll, yeah, right? And but somehow we always did, just about. Yeah. So we never had a single month of default or delay. Okay, for me, that was success at that stage. Mm-hmm. We survived.
Yeah.
Okay. We were living by our wits, producing new products each time, somehow getting to sell them, right? Being very frugal, keeping our costs low, very often foregoing our own salary. I remember for the first 10 years before we raised venture capital, for roughly, I think, 7 years or 6 years, I could not take a salary. You know, yeah. I think 6 years, maybe 7 years, right? And it was sporadic, and it was not a lot when it came. And therefore, I would teach on weekends at business schools in and around Delhi, as visiting faculty, to get some money in order to survive.
Yeah.
Okay? But you manage. Yeah. Right? You know, if you're jugadu enough, you manage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's lovely. I want to double click there, right? In the moment, at the time when it was happening, like a lot of the fancy words like hustle, jugaad are now table stakes, right? We know founders are supposed to do that. But what was in the moment that kept you at it, because the Zomato investment was...
Yeah, jugaad became a strategy.
To survive.
Only lately. Right? Before that, you were doing it and not thinking much about it.
Hmm.
Because, you know...
You had to.
You had to.
Yeah. Got right? it.
I mean, how did I become a visiting faculty? Basically, I had quit my job and I was... A former colleague of mine in my last company was teaching at IIMT Ghaziabad as a visiting faculty.
Hmm.
I said, mere koi pran hai. How much do you get paid? He said, I get paid 250 rupees an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, that's great. That's a class is, I take a class for 90 minutes. I said, that's great. That's 300 rupees. So mm-hmm. Can I take 8 classes? Can I take, say, 7 classes a month, 6 classes, whatever? I can get 2,500 rupees in a month.
Mm-hmm.
He said, yeah, let me figure. So give me your CV. I asked him, hey, which is the worst taught course by a visiting faculty in marketing last year? So he told me marketing and service industries. Now, I had never studied it, never done it, you know, kuch pata nahi tha. I said, main wohi padhaunga. Because, you know, wahan pe need hai.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I said, why was it badly taught? He said, because the visiting faculty got transferred halfway through the course to Bombay. And so the course could not be completed. So, mm-hmm. I said, banda hi nahi hai. He said, nahi, banda hi nahi hai. So I said, please, mera CV dal de.
Perfect.
So they called me and they gave it to me.
I love it.
So I identified need gap. So if you identify need gap,
hmm.
You know, in Naukri, we identify a need gap. In our earlier business, we identify a need gap. Zomato, we identify a need gap.
Yeah.
If you identify a need gap and just plug it.
Yeah.
and then build a moat around it, around your business, you'll be all right.
Lovely. I love how simple you make it sound and how it is actually, and you don't over glamorize any of it. It's just the need of what you did. Because it's commendable how the Zomato story also, we've all heard the story of you writing an email to Dipinder Goyal one day and you reaching out proactively. Who would say that, you know, this CEO at the time or like the founder of a digital first public company would have made that move, but you did. So that was really commendable. I want to understand the fact that you've seen yourself evolve over the years. You've seen other generational entrepreneurs through the, you know, thick and thin. You've seen them through the first investment to when they've gone public. Are there any common traits that you can perhaps highlight that outlive or that are just evident in outlier founders?
See, I'll tell you a honest answer. Every founder we invested in, we believed in.
Okay.
Some succeeded wildly. Hmm. Some are still work in progress, and some did not. But all of them are good, yeah. Right? So if you ask me now, so in hindsight, you will always find reasons for failure.
Yeah.
Okay. In hindsight, you'll always say, this is what is great about this guy. So sometimes I think maybe, you know, I'm not so good at identifying. Maybe I just invested in 10 and 2 worked. Mm. Okay. But obviously there must be something. I think the biggest thing is there has to be some ability to sell and raise revenue. Raise money is important from investors, but raise revenue from customers. Right. You've got to have a rainmaker. Mm. I think a clear eye on the customer and the customer's needs and a very good product person. Now, all of this need not be in one person, but it should be there in the founding team and the team around them.
Mm. Got it.
Right? I think to be very good with people, because you can't build a team otherwise.
Yeah.
In the early to mid stage of a company, it is the founder or the founders who have to be the personal magnet for talent.
Absolutely.
They have to be the kind of people who others want to work with. Right? They also, all of them, have to be good salespeople.
Yeah.
Not just selling to customers, selling to investors, selling to colleagues and employees.
Yeah.
Right? You're selling all the time.
Absolutely.
So people have to be convinced that what you're doing is something they want to do and is worthwhile.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how you attract employees, because in the beginning you won't have money.
Yeah.
To pay high salaries. But you have to have the belief and passion in yourself, and you have to be able to communicate it in an infectious manner.
Yeah.
So that others can join enthusiastically.
Sure.
Even if you don't have the money.
Sure. Fascinating.
And then, you know, hopefully you'll get things done, because hopefully you'll also produce a good product because you know your customer.
100%.
And hopefully you will be able to sell to customers and get money, because you have to be a good salesman.
Sure.
So I think the single most important trait of an entrepreneur is the ability to create trust across the table with employees, co-founders, investors, customers. Right? That's in the moment right now. And then I think resilience and persistence to hang on in for the long haul. I remember before we went into Zomato, I sat with Deepinder and Pankaj and I asked them a point blank question. Guys, you guys are not MBAs, you're out of IIT. You work in Bain Consulting. The typical path of an IIT grad who goes to a consulting company is after 2 years, you go to the US for an MBA.
Yeah.
Right? I hope you're not just dabbling. And after 2 years, you'll say, you know, that is a hobby and interest. Ho gaya.
Yeah.
Now I'm doing an MBA. Mm-hmm. You'll stay with it because that's the salary minimum.
Right.
And they looked me in the eye and said, yes, we are in for the long haul. We put in this money. I think so. Resilience, persistence, really important.
Absolutely.
Kuch bhi ho jaye.
Yeah. No, that's phenomenal. Since we're on the Zomato story, the Zomato success was not very evident until a couple of years in, right? And the food delivery business came later. But Info Edge kept backing Zomato for the first couple of rounds almost solely.
We were solo in the first 4 rounds. Hmm. It's in the 5th round that we got a co-investor, Sequoia.
Hmm.
But in the first 4 rounds, we always went in against a competitive term sheet. So there were others who were interested.
Got it.
So the first time we met Deepinder, he was having a verbal conversation with a bulge bracket VC, who were offering him $500,000 for 25% of the company. This is $1.5 million pre-money.
Sure.
And we told him, so first of all, like, our chemistry was good, and you know,
of course,
you know, we are founders, so we can talk to founders, you know, properly, right? And we can relate to them. What we said was, at least in $500,000, you'll start raising money within 2 months, because you know, because it'll last you 6 months, and it takes 4-5 million lakh to raise money, and you would not have achieved anything in 2 months. So why didn't you take twice the money and we'll up the valuation, which is what we did.
Got it.
The second round, another bulge bracket VC came and said, we will give you $3 billion at 15 million pre-money. And we quickly scrambled and said, we'll give you $3 million at $12 million pre-money, but hamara diligence nahi hoga. You won't have a second MIS to give to anybody. You will not be having two investors on your cap table. Your life will be less complicated.
Got it.
They said, okay. The third time we went in was another international VC. All the three were international VCs. And they were talking about $6 million at $30 million pre. The deal fell apart when they insisted on LICPREF in US dollars. And we put our foot down and said, listen, you know, you're investing in India, your LICPREF will be in rupees. You know, you take the exchange risk. It's not this company's job to, and other shareholders to bear the brunt of the exchange risk. And we made an alternate offer. We said, okay, you don't need $6 million. You actually need $3 million. We'll give you $3 million at the same valuation. So, and the fourth time was when they wanted, Dipinder wanted some $60 million valuation.
Okay.
He was getting $44 million in the market.
Okay.
And we went and sold it to our board. And say, देखो हम 60 million दे देते हैं इसको. We already own 48%. So if you up the valuation, it's not as you're losing out a lot, because your average price will anyway be low. Second, we're going to majority now, and therefore we can take it as a premium for that.
Right.
Both said okay. So fourth round, we put in 10 million at I think 60 million or something. The fifth round is when Sequoia came in.
Got it. And you.
But you know, it requires. What others will say, conviction.
Yeah.
In hindsight, maybe it was a little bit of foolishness on our part to do four rounds solo, a little bit of aggression. But we were not schooled in the nuances of fund management.
Got it.
We were not running a fund. We were investing off our balance sheet.
Yeah.
So, her quarter, Naukri was making profits, her mahine. And money was piling up in the bank, and we were deploying it.
Right.
Okay. And we felt, so you know, our. If you went into money market mutual funds or you went to fixed deposits, you got 5-6% per annum. So humne bolaya 5-6% zyada mil jayega. So it is, the alternate uses that.
Right.
So may as well do it here.
Got it.
Now, we're looking very clever and smart because it worked out. If it had not worked out, we would have looked very foolish.
Yeah.
And, you know, risky and foolhardy and stupid.
Yeah. No, but I
think. So, you know, we backed the right person and the right team, chasing the right idea. We also got lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. Very kind of you to acknowledge the luck, but it's phenomenal to have that kind of belief and keep on doubling down. Because even if, like, we see the VCs today, even if there is belief, there is, you know, scariness of what signals will be like, if you can double down or not, pricing, all of that.
No, dekho, I'll tell you one other thing. The fund hota hai na, uski life hoti hai.
Correct.
Uske baad, the fund has to return money to its LPs. Which means that now typical fund life is 10 plus 2 years, you know, 8 plus 2 years, right? Which means by year, now if you invest in a fund in the second year operation, by year 7, 8, you're getting nervous and you want to exit.
Yeah.
The truth is in India, it takes maybe you know, 12 to 15 years for a company to really, from inception to really
get
become
to
big
profitable
and valuable.
Large.
So we invested in Policy Bazaar in 2008. 15 saal baad, we are still there. We invested in Zomato in 2010. 15 saal baad, we are still there. If we had been a typical fund, in Policy Bazaar, we would exit by 2015. And somehow did something. Okay. Yeah. And Zomato by 2018.
Yeah.
We have done all right, but we don't have created these outsized returns. Okay, so very often, you know, India, may you need very patient capital, and that's important.
Absolutely.
And this, the level of patience required very often is beyond the life of a usual venture capital fund.
Quite.
Now, agar aap 20 saal ka fund karoge, shayad aapko LP nahi milenge. Well, very few people want to wait that long.
Correct.
So this becomes a dilemma in India that, you know, I think we went public maybe 6.5 years after we raised the first round. We were very fast.
Yeah.
Mama Earth is fast.
Yeah.
6, 7 years, jitna bhi hai unka. But otherwise, people have taken a long time.
Absolutely.
You know, Zomato took 13 years from inception. Policy Bazaar took 13 years from inception. Just Dial took, I think, 15, 20 years. I think IndiaMART took 20 years, maybe 18 years. Matrimony took 18, 20 years. You know, Make My Trip did about 10 years.
Yeah.
So, samay lagta hai. And the truth also is in India, non-IPO strategic sales, where the VCs and investors get the kind of multiple they were looking for when they went in, are very, very infrequent. If you leave out Flipkart.
Barely any.
Okay, so you're talking about really building a great business and going public.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is very helpful. Thank you so much for walking us through this very evident point of patient capital. I'd love to also extend this to the public market. So there's this large debate and, you know, there's a two-sided debate. The retail investor does not understand why some of these venture-backed companies are on losses and are waiting to create profitability. That concept in and of itself is not very clear. What do you think about that in terms of, because you're used to building profitable businesses, having large profits to deploy back to the shareholders. What do you think about the current way of building business when it comes to venture back?
Dekho, in the middle, companies making losses became acceptable. Around 2019, 2021. When interest rates began to go up and the markets corrected, right? That is when people say, oh, you know, let's go back to basics. We want profitable companies. Zomato is now profitable. Policy Bazaar is saying they'll get to profit. Right? Mama Earth is profitable.
Yeah.
IndiaMART is profitable. Infoverge is profitable. Matrimony is profitable. Make My Trip is profitable. Indian markets may, even now, there is reluctance to back loss-making companies for a length of time.
Sure.
So can you go public while you're loss-making? You probably can, as long as, you know, you're growing really fast, in line of sight hai, and buzz hai, or brand hai, or size and scale hai. But you certainly should be making profit in 2-3 years. Now, ideally, you should be profitable when you go public.
Got it. And
market mein hota hai.
Correct. And how do startup founders enforce this from the start, or is it okay to enforce it towards the end of the company life cycle or the start of the public journey?
If you are a young startup founder, right, you say you're 25, 28. So we backed Vipin the first when he was 28, right? At 28, you haven't spent 2 decades in industry, in large corporations, understanding how they work.
Correct.
Ki, you know, sales call kaise hoti hai, sales organization kaise hoti hai, sales leadership kaun hota hai, how to run a finance function, right? How to run a team of 2,000 people.
You
at
don't
28,
know that.
You don't have that.
Correct.
At 28, if you're very good, what you have is product genius. What you have is a pulse on the customer. What you have is something that's working.
Right.
Okay? Which is what Dipinder had.
Yeah.
Question is, how soon can you surround yourself with others who have that, or how soon can you imbibe it? Or both.
Correct.
Along this journey, you are often guided by perhaps your investors,
right?
Who have seen other companies, who are perhaps slightly older.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get talent from outside into the company. Very often the talent is older than you. So as a person, you have to be mature enough to handle talent that's older than you.
100%.
Which becomes a challenge in India sometimes.
Yeah.
Because even the talent has to be willing to be report to somebody who's 10 years younger.
Yeah.
Right? So if you can manage all that and navigate all that, you'll be all right. Right? So, young founders, I think it's important that companies get to profit. If not now, then pretty soon or within the finite time, certainly before you go public.
Sure.
Certainly if capital is scarce or scarcer than it used to be, you know, and people are not valuing you of GMV anymore, or less so.
Yeah.
You know, they're valuing you of revenue, margin, path to profit, you know, market leadership,
yeah,
you know, unit economics, all those things, commercial metrics also.
Sure.
You need to focus on that as well.
Got it. Perfect. No, I think that makes complete sense. The other thing, you know, the investor side of you is very widely known, and there's so much respect in the ecosystem, primarily because you've built this large institution that a lot of people aspire to build. What do you think of investors who have been career investors for the longest time? And how do you think that distinction in the ecosystem is getting bridged?
So we think investors who are pure financial investors add value.
Okay.
Because they bring to the table many things that we don't have. We also believe that we add value because we bring to the table many things that perhaps they don't have as much of.
Got it.
So we have found that we have teamed up in companies where there are more than one investor. We have teamed up with other investors to actually...
complementary skill sets.
Yeah. We look, both have a bit of both.
Right.
But some are better at stuff that we don't have. Got it. So we are still building that culture.
Got it.
Okay. Now, founders tell us that the kind of conversations they have with us are very different from the kind of conversation they have with financial investors.
Yeah.
But both kinds of conversations are required.
Got it.
We will discuss more operations. We'll discuss ki boss sales team kaise organize kiya, incentive plan kiya. Acha, how are you organizing your call center?
Yeah.
What's the script like? So because we do all that inside our own company, for Naukri, for 99 Acres, for Jeevan Sathi, for, you know, media bank kaise kar rahe ho? Acha, who's the analytics guy? And we can discuss our analytics team. See, there is a whole bunch of competencies which are very useful but are very expensive. So AI, ML, analytics.
Yeah.
Now, in Naukri, we have a team of over 40 people doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So your guys can come and talk to our guys.
Yeah.
If you want. Got it. Only if you want.
Yeah. So you have those capabilities.
So also we talk that lingo.
Yeah.
We understand the operational aspects, you know, very well. Now, financial investors bring a whole bunch of other things which you don't have, which are very useful as well.
Got it.
Now, it could be a network of other investors. It could be, you know, the analyst, you know, run, scrub the numbers dry, the spreadsheets, all that, right? Yeah. We don't do perhaps financial modeling as well as they do.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Got it. So there's a host of skill sets, and the founder can choose to leverage one over the other in certain situations and choose to leverage the others.
Absolutely.
Got it. No, that's phenomenal to hear. The other job of an investor is also, you know, on the governance side. And we did see a couple of these quarters where only the negative news was getting highlighted because of whatever reason. As somebody who's, you know, been in very controlled situations and led, you know, profitable companies, a group of companies now, what do you have to say? And you've been on the other side as well. You've been on boards of these companies which have gone IPO. What do you think is the role of corporate governance from the investor end?
See, you can't build large, sustainable, well-respected companies and businesses if you're bad at governance, number one. So first of all, governance has to be in your DA intrinsically. That I'm honest, I want to be honest. Main imandar hu. Right? Now, if you're that kind of person, right, you will want to run your company in a well-governed fashion.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll tell you the early conversations that we had. So April 2000, we raised venture capital for the first time from ICICI Venture. Right? There were a few clauses in the shareholder agreement, okay, which I had not paid attention to at that time. But the moment the first check came in, first thing, please change your auditor.
Okay.
So, I said, why? He says, no, we want a big five auditor. So, I punched there. We want a big five auditor. I said, nahin yaar, bahut mehenge honge. I argued for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, because I said, yaar, I don't want to make a loss. Hum imandar hain, koi problem nahi hai. No, aap imandar ho, that's why we invested. But we want a big five auditor. This is a requirement. Aur aapne clause signed kiya that you will hire an auditor to our satisfaction. Okay? So, we went shopping. Okay, sabse baat ki.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody's charging 10 lakhs, somebody 5 lakhs. You know, we had done a revenue of 36 lakhs a year before with 1.8 lakhs profit before tax because I wasn't taking a salary. Agar main salary lata, loss rehta.
Right.
Theek hai? So, finally, I met Kaushik Datta, partner at Pricewaterhouse. And he said, look, I like you. Tell me what you want. I said, yeah, I want to an audit in 90,000 rupees, half my last year's profit. He said, okay, I'll do it in 1 lakh rupees on 3 conditions. Number one, as you grow, we'll increase the audit fees and you will not question me till we hit our regular audit fees.
Okay.
Okay, no problem. It's all over there. You know? Second, at 1 lakh rupees, you will not make too much effort. I would not have to go deep into your accounts to find something.
Okay.
You have to give me your word. You will be totally clean, honest.
Perfect.
I said, we are like that anyway.
Yeah.
So, no problem with that.
Works out.
So, it's very good. He said, then, he says, you will internalize that your auditors and your independent directors are there to save you from yourself.
Okay.
They will not, they are not policemen from outside.
Hmm.
It basically means you have to let them in to guide you and you will not hoodwink them or pull the wool over their eyes. You will be totally transparent. So they are there to save you from yourself.
Wow.
Because promoters in India do all kinds of funny things.
Yeah.
Right? Our job is to save you from yourself.
Very interesting.
Okay. I said, yeah, done. We were totally transparent. We want to do the right thing. Okay, so these are 3 conversations that we had with the auditor and we hired the auditor. Conversations with the investor. So, pehle unhone bola auditor lao, auditor liya hai. Phir unhone bola independent director lao.
Okay.
So, we went out. Koi aane ko tayar nahi. Because at that time, .coms were a bad word. The market had melted down.
Yeah.
So, finally they said, okay, get somebody who knows you, likes you, trusts you. And is highly qualified and will function independently even though he knows you.
Hmm. Okay.
In your judgment, and we'll interview him in our judgment also.
Fair.
So we got an independent director, okay, who's still on our board, but as non independent.
Got it.
23 saal ho gaye.
Wow.
22 saal ho gaye. Then they said, ki you don't decide your salary.
Oh, the board does.
We do.
Mm.
Because you can't get rich on our money.
Mm.
So your salary will be such that you'll survive, but aapke paas savings nahi hongi. Now, usse pehle mein tanka zero thi. So I said, what salary do you have in mind? He said, 1 lakh rupees per month. I said, excellent, outstanding. I was zero earlier. Okay, and then they said, you can't get rich till we get rich, which basically means that you can't sell a single share without our permission, and that permission is not going to come.
Hmm. Wow.
So you will therefore be totally incentivized to make the company large and valuable so that everybody benefits.
Hmm.
Then they said, there must be zero related party transactions.
Hmm. Got it.
Koi kisi ka bhai nahi, kisi ka cousin nahi,
bhanja nahi.
You have to take a permission. Hmm. It's possible, but take a permission. Right?
Yeah.
So related party transactions, be very careful and take a permission everywhere prior.
Got it.
Then they said one more thing, which is prior disclosure is 80% of good governance. कि आपने पहले बता दिया है कि मैं ये कर रहा हूँ अदर आर ओके विद इट देन यू गो अहेड
करेक्ट
सो देयर आर सम फंडामेंटल प्रिंसिपल्स ऑफ गुड गवर्नेंस बट यू नो इट बिगिंस एंड एंड्स इन द फाउंडर्स हेड If it doesn't the basic DNA ki main imandar hu aur imandar rahunga,
it works out and they keep it intact. Do you think these principles somewhere got lost in the ecosystem, or, and do you think these are relevant in today's times?
They're totally relevant.
Okay.
Did they get lost? Answer is yes. When there's too much money, people do all sorts of funny things.
Got it. Fair. No, I think that's those are very, very crucial principles. I wanted to ask you, what are the fundamentals of a company that will eventually go public, and that in reverse is perhaps the answer.
No, I think that's part of it. Good governance is part of it. But business has to be sound and solid and predictable and robust and growing and either profitable or with clear visibility of profit.
Sure.
It also has to be a certain size and scale. You know, below a certain size and scale, it's not a good idea to go public. See, I'll tell you something. Taking a company that's worthy of taking public is a great thing. But if you're not ready to go public and you go public, it can be a terrible thing for your company. Because there's nothing worse for your reputation and your employee morale and confidence than a failed IPO or an IPO that is underwater for a longish time. You can somehow push through an IPO. Very often bankers will do it for you.
Yeah.
And some investors will come in. But an IPO has to be serviced. Investor relations is not a finance job.
Yeah.
It is a sales and service job.
Okay.
You've got to keep on talking to investors, prospective investors, keep on, you know, discussing and keep on servicing them.
Correct.
And if you don't have continuing good news,
then it becomes a problem. Yeah. That's interesting. A lot of other patterns in your career, which is, you know, be super long-term, build things predictably, be honest. These are all intuitive insights, yet they get lost somewhere in the middle, right? They're also not very interesting. So there's no thrill. In the day-to-day life of an entrepreneur, people who love building 0 to 1, unhe hustle chahiye, thrill chahiye. They want to, you know, they want to fix things which are broken, etc. But public company run karne mein wo sari cheeze nahi hai. Do you see this as a problem of sorts, or how do people make peace with the boring way of building large financial institutions?
Dekho, the truth is, I never thought long term. I always thought today.
Immediate.
But the method of working remained what it was, which is that you'll be good with people, you'll follow the law, you'll be good with the minority shareholders, you will avoid conflict of interest, you will pay your full taxes, right? And you will run a high quality business.
Yeah.
That is a daily method of working. Chahe 10 saal lage, chahe 5 saal lage, chahe 1 saal lage, I mean, no, we didn't think about that.
Got it.
Ultimately, 10 saal lag gaye.
Fair. Now, this is very interesting. So if I had to also ask you, there's this new type of entrepreneur. We were discussing this before the conversation started, right? All of the Zomato founders were IIT Delhi, Policy Bazaar Yashish has been from, you know, IIT Delhi, IIM. There was this archetype of founders jo 2005 se 15 mein worked out well. But aaj wale founders different hai. There's a new breed of founders coming up. What do you think about this change?
Well, actually, if you go back further in history, right, India has always been a entrepreneurial country.
Sure.
Even in the days of license permit raj, it was entrepreneurship. Right? But the truth is that India has a very large middle class where we were always conditioned, middle class parents were always conditioned their kids to study really hard, clear the entrance exams, get good marks, eventually take up a good job.
Okay.
A good job could be in government, could be in private sector, could be academics, whatever. But good, safe, steady job with a monthly salary, predictably. Okay, so the Indian middle class had this great quest for financial security, right? And therefore, most Indian middle class young men and women would not become entrepreneurs. Things began to change a little bit, first with the IT services companies, subsequently the first wave of dot-coms, right? Today, so, you know, in my class when I'm in Ahmedabad, I graduated in 89, if you had done a poll and said how many of you would want to be entrepreneurs at some point in time in your life, maybe 10-15% of the hands would have gone up. Today it'll be about 50-60%. And the batch size is 3x or 2.5x, right? So entrepreneurship has become a mainstream career choice, an aspiration career choice for people of that socioeconomic background who would otherwise have gone into salary jobs in large corporations. So I think yeh badlav hua hai, and this is significant. So, you know, I'll tell you why it's significant. So, when I go to the IITs and IIMs and give a talk, I very often ask a question. How many of you are from families which you would describe as middle class? Roughly about 80% of the hands go up.
Okay.
When I say middle class, I mean salaried jobs.
Khana hai, ghar hai.
Salaried jobs.
Right.
You know, not in business.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Means government, public sector,
okay.
Railways, police, defense, academics, banking, maybe private sector, but still salaried jobs.
Got it.
Okay. And what this tells you is that it's the Indian middle class where parents tell their children that you have nothing to inherit. The only way you can make it is to studies. Go out there and clear the competitive exams. Yeah. Go get the board marks and you get the admissions. And so the Indian middle class students lock their butts off.
Yeah.
And some of them make it. Right? And these people were earlier joining the best large corporations as employees.
Correct.
They're the brightest talent. They've cleared all the exams. They studied hard. But they were risk averse. Today, many of them have got different aspirations. And I think, so this thing of highly educated middle class entrepreneurs by choice. Earlier, hota tha, entrepreneur inheritance, business family, business community, business caste.
Correct.
Naukri nahi mili, kuch kar diya, chalu.
Right.
Okay? So, but this is the new kind of entrepreneur. And this is the kind of entrepreneur which very often gets VC funding.
True. Wow, I think that's very deep. And
so ye badlav hua hai, and I think that is good.
Absolutely. Your understanding of the Indian consumer set and like founders in general is very deep. Aapne founder side pe bahut hame bataya, what is on the consumer set that you have seen evolution for? Like as the digital economy has grown, how has the Indian consumer also evolved?
So when we began Naukri, there were 14,000 internet accounts in the country, like I told you.
Yeah.
Right, today there are close to 1 billion people on the net using the internet. So obviously the market is much larger. I think a lot of them are actually transacting. They're consuming content. All of this is a new economy. Okay, there's a lot of change. The consumer is a 20-year-old. It's very different from a 30-year-old. See, a 20-year-old was born after the internet came, after mobile telephony came. A 30-year-old still has, as a childhood, was not digitally native. Right. And wo farak hai in the conduct behavior, willingness to buy, how quick they work.
Sure.
And you can see that in the evolution of social media platforms.
Yeah.
Right. Pehle email tha, phir SMS aaya.
Yeah.
Or email SMS at the same time.
Correct.
Then WhatsApp, then Instagram, then share, then all these kind of things. So, and as the younger audience is, so a 20-year-old is often not on the same social media platform as a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
As a 60-year-old, I club them together.
Correct.
But actually, they don't club themselves together.
True.
And a 14-year-old is not on the same platform as a 20-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's taken a major shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got to keep close and keep understanding stuff. And I can't understand very often. So what I do is I just hire younger people in the company and younger
and
people
understand
and,
it well.
And younger people teach us.
100%. That's lovely to hear. Coming to another side of, you know, your professional trajectory, you started Ashoka University. You yourself...
So I'm one of
the founders.
Ashoka now has close to 200 founders.
Okay.
I'm one of them.
Sure. Part of a larger cohort, of course, but starting an institutional education institution, and then you've also been, you know, you've gone to really great schools yourselves in Stephens, IIM Ahmedabad. Talk to us about the importance of perhaps great education in the general person's life today.
So look, we have always identified a need gap and then built something for it, right? And I was observing, before and after we went public, that, look, India has the best students,
yeah,
right? And Indian institutions produce the best graduates.
Yeah.
But is that Darwin at work or is that institutional excellence? That was a question that always bothered me. Now, as I used to go and speak in Indian colleges, I found the students exceptionally bright. I went overseas and spoke and met young people. I found that very often students in Indian institutions are brighter than them. But the institutional excellence there is of a different order. You know, when you look at Cambridge or you look at Princeton.
Sure.
Right? And I said to myself, why can't we have an institution in India which to some extent replicates some of that? And while the IITs are excellent, right? There's institutional excellence in the IITs and IIMs.
Of course.
So on the engineering side, management side, we felt the problem had been somewhat solved.
Sure.
But we felt on general BA liberal arts programs, we felt there was a gap.
Sure.
And so I went to Ashish Dhawan and I said, listen, I think it's time to start a new college, a new type of university in India, a new college in India, liberal arts and sciences. Built on the American model, not the UK model. See, hamare jo hai na, it's the UK model. Pick a subject and just study it.
Right.
In the US, you do WITS, you do courses across 5-6 areas in the first 2 years, then you decide your major.
Right.
Hindustan mein kya hota hai ki what you graduate in depends on the marks you got in class 12 or in that entrance exam.
Right.
Right. I want to do computer science, but mereko civil mili yaar. Mere rank utni achi nahi thi. But I'm passionate about computer science. So we wanted to change a few things. We said, pehle to hum liberal arts sciences mein pehle focus karenge. Uske baad hum dusre mein jayenge. Right? Second, we'll allow students to, we'll do WITS first and then allow students to choose their major. Yeah. It will not depend on the class 12 marks. The class 12 marks are useful in determining who to admit. Once you admit somebody, he or she can choose the major after a year.
Got it.
Okay. Then we said that we will do collective philanthropy, which basically means it's not one person putting in all the money, so it doesn't become a family business or one company university.
Correct.
So because there are 200 founders close to, right, no one person
controls it,
decides what happens. What does it mean for governance? It means that the academics have independence.
Absolutely.
Because there are checks and balances.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. We said we would start with liberal arts and humanities, which is social science humanities, and then add on science, then add on entrepreneurship, which is the trajectory we followed.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. We started with 25 acres. We now have got close to 100 acres of land. We are building the second phase of the campus. We said that we will make it financially inclusive. So almost 60% of the students at Ashoka are on some kind of scholarship, from 25% to maybe 100%, depending on your family income.
Sure.
Right? We said over a period of time we'd be financially sustainable. Right? Yet at the same time inclusive.
Yeah.
So these are 5, 7, 8, 10. We also said that, listen, you know, in India, agar ek cheez kamyab ho gayi, people copy it. Right?
Yeah.
So the government started 5 IITs first. Wo kamyab ho gaye, unke graduates. There are 4,000 engineering colleges now all over India.
True.
Right? The government started 3 IIMs.
Multiple.
Now there are 3,000 management schools. Demand hai, abadi hai, population hai. Okay. So we said we'd produce one Ashoka, build it out. If you can make it succeed, maybe 100 more will come up. And a country of 1.4 billion needs that many. So we said we'll open ourselves to others who want to start similar institutions. And that's what we're doing. So today, there are other colleges and universities that have started liberal arts programs along the lines of
Ashoka.
There are universities coming up along the lines of Ashoka. Mm. And we think that's a good thing.
100%. That's a great service to the nation and very commendable what you've been able to do beyond the ambit of capitalism on this front as well. On the subject of, you know, young folks and great education, you know, that we were talking about this and I brought up the 70-hour sort of comment that Mr. Narayan Murthy made recently on the public. As you look at somebody who interacts with many, many youngsters in the country, be it founders, be it operators at startups, be it folks taking up education in the institution, what is your observation on today's youngster and how they work?
See, I'll tell you, 70 hours a week is not religion. I think the concept was be prepared to work as hard as required. Mm-hmm. And that may be much harder than you're working right now. Mm-hmm. Right? If you look at any entrepreneur in India who succeeded, ask him, kitni mehnat ki? He will say, maine bahut mehnat ki hai. Because to make something work in India, you got to put in the hours.
100%.
Right? So, you know, the truth is, if you're doing a startup, there is no work-life balance. There's only work-life integration. You live for your work for the first few years, definitely. Yeah. You can't push off at 5 p.m. and say, ho gaya. You cannot, you know, say, Saturday, Sunday, mein kaam nahi karta. Mm-hmm. Okay, aapko karna padega if you wanted to succeed. Meko ek kamyab first generation entrepreneur dikha do. Jo in the first 5-10 years did not have this work ethic and has succeeded. It doesn't happen.
Right.
So nobody's saying work 70 hours definitely by the clock.
Yeah.
But you may have to. If I go back to my career, my first 3 years in advertising, right? It's a technically 5-day week, 9:15 to 5:45. But I used to be off at 8:30. Why? Because manual typewriters in those days, we had 2-3 typists in the office secretaries. Everybody used to share them. Now, you want to write your letters to clients, your memos and your letters, which are typed, right? Typing was a scarce resource. Mm. So the guy could only turn out 8, 10, 12 documents, 20 documents a day.
Right.
He or she would see, you know, FIFO, first in, first out.
Yeah.
So you want to get in early in the morning to make sure your letter was on top.
Mm.
So you came at 8:30, handwrote your letter and make sure before the guy comes in, you're on top. Wow. Now, others who didn't come in didn't get the letters out in time.
Hmm.
I went the extra mile.
Right.
Okay. I ended up working. I didn't take a single day's leave. I worked all Saturdays, maybe 6 months on Sundays for 3 years. I didn't feel it was a burden. I was enthusiastic about my work.
Hmm.
The work, you know, demanded it.
Sure.
I was transferred to Bombay, right? And I was living with a paying guest. And my salary just wasn't enough. But if you ended up working late beyond 8:30, you got dinner and transport back home. If you came on Saturday, Sunday, you got dinner and you got transport back to and fro, and you got lunch.
Mm.
Right? So I would volunteer for all this.
Mm.
I simply needed to. Yeah. And I didn't complain. So I don't think 70 hours is religion, but I think the message is that if you really want to succeed as an entrepreneur, aapko mehnat karni padegi.
Go the extra mile.
Mehnat karni padegi. As simple as that. And hopefully you won't mind doing it because you want to build that startup.
Absolutely.
So this is not lecture bazi. This is, you know, reality.
Yeah. No, it shows. I think when you, this is the complete personification of meaning what you say, saying what you've done, and it just shows in the way you've been able to say it as well. And I think a lot of folks can testify to it. The other thing about building startups, and maybe we bring that to a close, post which we can get to just quick concluding questions, is the fact that you identify these white spaces in the Indian sort of digital economy, be it, you know, aggregating menus, be it aggregating policies, be it aggregating job boards.
So those two were identified by Deepinder and team and Ashish and team. Not
sure.
Me.
I mean,
we recognize that there may be something here. So sure. Please back them.
Absolutely. And
we got lucky that they allowed us to back them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the success, the credit for success of a company goes to the management team, not to the investor.
100%, yes, yes. At no point do I want to misconstrue this. These are, of course, the companies built by the founders and investors have a minor role in it. But the larger point I wanted to understand, because you have so much experience, is that you were able to pick cues from these trends which were happening.
Humne between 2007 and 2012, shayad 10 companies ki hongi.
Right.
Many have sunk without a trace. But because Zomato and Policy was succeeded,
we talk about
people that. Have forgotten about the others. So once you have wonderful successes, na, so khun maap ho jate hain. So we are good, but we are not infallible.
Of course.
We often get it wrong, still.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would hesitate to say that, we are super smart and we are geniuses. No, we muddle through.
Got it. Yeah, no, I completely agree.
Okay, so we all muddle through, yaar.
The humility is great, and I understand the principle.
I mean, if there's somebody who looks like a genius from far, it's Steve Jobs. Okay. He will produce a product which the customer doesn't know he or she wants, but he will produce it, and after he produces it, I was just looking for this.
Correct.
Rest of us follow customer trends. He created customer trends.
Yeah. That's true, but yeah, I mean, this is a small digression, but there's also a famous story where he was absolutely against the iPhone and his team had to succeed. So even the best perhaps get it wrong.
So I made so many mistakes, but others told me, boss, you're wrong. And I said yes, and ultimately credit me when I don't deserve it.
Correct.
So let me give you some examples.
Please.
Naukri initially was a job listing board, only a job listing board.
Right.
Today's 65 to 70% of our revenue comes from the resume database.
Hmm.
We were not even gathering resumes. It was Hitesh and Vivek Khare who insisted we have to gather the resumes. And I resisted for 6 months. Finally, I agreed, and that has become our biggest product. Okay? Zomato was just a restaurant listing site. 2018, so, pehle 10 saal just restaurant listings, and that's what we backed. 2018, Deepinder came to me along with Gigi and said, "Hum food delivery ja rahe hain, food delivery." I said, "Don't be daft, it'll burn money, don't do it. Mistake of your life." He insisted. I said, "Fine, do it."
Mm.
And that's what has built this company.
Absolutely.
Okay. On numerous occasions.
That have been. Right?
So, for example, in Policy Bazaar, we went and sold some shares in the middle.
Hmm.
Kitty Agarwal came to me and said, "Why are you doing this?" And 6 months later, we invested again on her insistence. And that really worked out. So most things are the achievements of more than one person.
Sure. 100%. Right?
But public recognition mere ko milti hai. You know how we invest in Zomato? So we were investing in startups. We've done Policy Bazaar, done a few others, Merit Nation. And Hitesh one day was speaking to me and he said, "Have you seen this site, Food eBay?" That time Zomato was called Food eBay. I said, "Yes, I use it all the time. It's a great site." He said, "So do I. Why haven't you thought of investing in it?" A penny dropped. It was his idea, not my idea.
Hmm.
Wow. But I get the credit for it.
Sure.
That's the nature of, life. But nice. But the truth is, whatever has happened at InfoEdge is the result of a few hundred, maybe a few thousand people's efforts.
100%.
Some more than others.
Yeah. I'm so glad you've mentioned this because, we can't just single out the credit. Largely what I do, I was just trying to probe is, do you think there are distinct opportunities in your mind that will get built out in the next 5-10 years when you look at India as an economy?
There definitely are, and there must be. I don't know them.
Okay.
So we never invest top down. Okay. Boss, ye trend hai, ye macro hai, ab is sector ko dekho.
Okay.
Right? If we had done that, we would never have invested in Zomato or Policy Bazaar.
Right.
Because we often invest in category creating companies. Mm. The category does not exist. Mm. The sector does not exist.
Correct.
Right? What we like to do is just meet 1,000 entrepreneurs a quarter. Hum 1,000 companies dekhte hain. Either secondary research or talking to the founder or meeting the company, right?
Right.
Phir hum every quarter 3-4 mein invest karte hain.
Got it. Theek
hai? Or we do it bottom up. We see what's bubbling through. We see who's a good team and are they doing something interesting.
Got it.
And then we go in.
Got it.
So definitely there'll be a whole bunch of companies succeeding. Hmm. But no, we don't do it top down.
Got it.
So I can't identify sectors. We just look at startups.
Got it. That's fascinating. I think this has been very, very interesting. As we close down the episode, I had just a couple of more general personal questions for you. One of them was about this financial success, right? On paper, you're a billionaire. There's a lot that can be said about the money aspect of things. How do you define money in your life and what's the role it plays?
I think you're financially successful when you can do stuff without thinking about money.
Okay.
You're also financially successful when you live within your means.
Mm. Right? Yeah.
And the best definition of financial success is what was told to me by a friend. You're financially successful when you're doing better than your sister-in-law's husband.
Got it.
Okay. But truthfully speaking, I think if you keep your needs simple,
okay,
you don't have to drive the fanciest cars in the world. You don't need to buy property everywhere. Right? Just restrict it and then try and do good with the money you have. But let me tell you, all these lists of, you know, top 100, top, it's all rubbish. This is lazy journalism. Okay, these are basically journalists who are going to listed companies and say, who owns how much? There's so many people who have wealth in non-listed companies. Mm. That's not counted.
Yeah.
Second, if the share market goes up, right?
They will celebrate.
You know, they will say, bhai, ranking change ho gayi. But if you actually try and sell your shares.
Yeah.
So it's like saying, you know, my father bought a plot in Vasant Vihar for 4 lakh rupees or for 40,000 rupees in 1962. That plot is now worth 60 crores, 100 crores.
Mm.
Right? But it's a house I live in, man. I'm not going to sell it.
Mm. Yeah. Got it. Yeah, but
you don't build companies to trade.
100%. But
you build companies to, because you're building an institution.
The role of money and how founders should look at it, in your opinion?
Yeah, there's no should.
Okay.
To each his own.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's good to be detached from money.
Okay.
Because you sleep peacefully at night. It's good to pay your taxes.
Sure.
You sleep peacefully at night.
Makes sense. I love the humility. And it just makes sense. I think this is just good sense that we've heard all over generations, but sometimes it gets over glamorized when it comes to money. But thanks for reinforcing this belief. One question that I was personally very fascinated to learn from you is who are people that you have interesting conversations with? Because outside in, it looks like everybody would learn to talk to you. Everybody would want to gain your insights. Everybody would want to learn from your experiences. But what are your sources of learning, your sources of people that you find a lot of intellectual curiosity from?
So look, I love to meet people who are younger than me as I get older.
Hmm.
More and more people are younger than me, right? But I think fresh ideas come from young people.
Sure.
Right? So when I meet startup founders,
yeah,
I have interesting conversations.
Got it.
Right? When I meet the younger people you know, in our investing team,
yeah,
and they challenge me, I have interesting conversations.
Lovely.
Okay. Sometimes when I talk to an academic, mm-hmm, I have an interesting conversation.
Got it. It's a varied ambit, but yeah, people that have something to offer that is not immediately in your radar.
I think fresh ideas excite me.
Got it. And over the course of years, were there any mentors of sorts or people who played a crucial role in your journey?
Yeah, this term mentor, na?
Coffee overused.
It was not in use 20 years ago, yaar. Wo to ab zyada use ho gaya hai.
Haan ji.
So I don't have a mentor,
okay,
but I have learned from 50 different people, usually my colleagues.
Got it.
So when I was 21 in my first job, all the people around me,
hmm,
in that company, Lintas, my boss, I had 7-8 bosses in the first 2 years.
Yeah.
All of them were smart. My boss's boss, all of them.
Yeah.
Right? And I learned stuff like prioritization, clarity of thinking, customer connect, personal organization, working under stress and pressure, just managing people.
Mm.
So, you know, I was in a job as a 21-year-old. I had joined as a executive trainee. That's my title. I was in client servicing.
Got it.
Now, as a trainee in client servicing in an ad agency, I was at the bottom of the food chain. Absolute bottom. because I was responsible and accountable for outputs and outcomes without having any authority. So I was getting work done out of people who were older than me, were not reporting to me.
Yeah.
And if they didn't do my work, nothing had happened to them.
Right.
Because there were competing demands in that time. So you had to coax, cajole, charm, beg, and somehow make it happen. I think so maybe 70-80% of my people skills came from there. Right? And you learned how to be humble. You know, I went from St. Stephen's College with a chip on my shoulder. I'm smart.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, within 6 months, I was shown my place. And then I learned to work.
Got it.
So it was a tough apprenticeship, but also a lot of fun. And I made some good friends eventually.
Yeah, 100%. This has been very fascinating, sir. Thank you so much for all that you shared. I have last two questions before we conclude. One of them is, I'm also personally, again, very curious about this, but it just looks like even today you bring your 100% to everything that you end up doing. So if I had to ask you, how do you spend your time, both professionally and personally, now that you're at a point where most people would call this a success in the traditional sense of it, how do you now go about your days and what keeps you going today?
Oh, my day starts in the morning. I do some yoga. I have an instructor coming. And then, work starts. And it doesn't end till about 9 or 10 in the at night. I mean, on a sporadic basis.
Sure.
Right? And typically, what happens is that very often I'm not in control of my time. Mm-hmm. The stuff happens to you.
Sure.
I constantly get called for meetings or for events or conferences or whatever. And I have to prioritize. So I'm busy most of the time at work. So it's not as work is reduced. Sure. Just the nature of work has changed.
Got it. And what's the driving force still?
I think young people. I think the excitement of startups. I think entrepreneurship. When I meet entrepreneurs. So, for example, I just met a company which is trying to do something very interesting in women's safety. Now, it's a very prelim concept, but if it achieves what it wants to achieve, it'll help a lot of women, working women, right? And let's see how it. No, so I got into the. It's like, I love ideas, and I love people.
Got it. This is very, very motivating and inspiring to hear. I have one question before the end, which is on ambition. Sometimes when you've achieved and seen success, your level of ambition is just way higher. And ambition differs for people to people. When you're starting out, it's very relative in nature. What does ambition mean for you? And how do you perhaps help others look at something from a higher ambition lens?
So obviously, I'm full-time in the company. So I want the company to do better and better.
Sure.
That's part of the ambition. But I have to do it through helping and enabling other people to do their jobs better so the company does better. I also like to help people outside the company.
Sure.
Okay, whether it's young entrepreneurs, startups, whether it is whoever, right? I also work on a few government committees to try and advise, help, wherever I'm called.
Got it. Yeah. So it varies from a multiple course, but no, this is very helpful. To the end, I was trying to understand a fitting end, but I'll probably just end with a simplistic question, and it's twofold. It looks like you're a very value-oriented person and these values have led to your success. You mentioned it in passing through the conversation, but if you could perhaps summarize some of your core values as a person. And the
I don't want to over-framework this thing, but main ek cheez bolunga.
Please.
Your parents were right.
Okay. And that is the best one line I've heard on the podcast, I think. Brilliant. But no, I had the second part of the question was, if you have any strong opinions on things that you think are definitely how things should go, I think that also will be very helpful to hear at the end.
I'd like to see more entrepreneurs becoming more frugal.
Okay. Frugality.
I think some of the greatest companies are capital efficient.
Yeah.
So India is a capital scarce country. We have to use the capital wisely.
Sure. Got it. So frugality as a principle and your parents were right. Those are both amazing pointers to end at. Thank you so much, sir. I'm very grateful to have had the opportunity to host you. And thanks for being so gracious with your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.